Welcome to the podcast of justice. I'm a co-host. I don't want to call myself the host. I'm Isaac.
And I'm Charlie.
We just got done reviewing Brave and the Bold number 28, where they fight Starro. In this issue, issue number 29, they are fighting this guy called the Weapons Master, who is this bad guy with kind of a large noggin. There's nothing really that stands out about the Weapon Master. I guess maybe the yellow robot that he controls looks a little bit more recognizable than he does. The cover date for this was April, May 1960. It went on sale about February of that year. The cover price was 10 cents. That would be awesome. Those things were 10 cents. There are 32 pages. The editor was Julie Schwartz. Gardner Fox was the writer, penciler, Mike
Sikorsky. Okay, there you go.
And we have two inkers, Bernard Sachs and Joe
Gaella
or Gaella.
Yeah, so, I don't know how they say it. I always use Gaella, but I don't know. Yeah.
So the Weapons Master's name in this is Zotar, and he's from here. 11,960 AD. Basically, he's gone around. He's a criminal from the future, and he found this scrap of paper that talked about the downfall of the Justice League. And he kind of thought that he could have something to do with that. So he went around and he basically stole a bunch of high-tech weapons from, I don't know if it was various time points or just like different parts of the universe that he currently lived in. I don't know which one it was. But he had like a shrink ray and some of the devices. Sorry. He has the magneto bubble weapon. he has an illusion maker. The device that the Flash overcomes is called I'm not even sure how to pronounce this, the microscopeter. Which is pretty genius. You know, this comic was definitely catered to children because some of these words just sound so unbelievably horribly made up.
But they tell you...
They're sitting there having a meeting and he just comes in and he freezes all of them. And darn it to heck, it's a yellow ray. And so Green Lantern can't do anything about it.
Of course not.
Yeah, he's like, you gotta be freaking kidding me. You know, if this was any other color, I could, you know, probably do something. But he freezes them, and basically what he does is that he separates them. He separates himself from them in time somehow. So what he does is that he goes and he freezes them, and then he separates individual members to try to take them out one by one. Well, that doesn't really work out because each one of them finds their own little special way to overcome him. I think the first one was Flash. He shrinks him down to a tiny little Flash with the microscopeter, and Flash still manages to get inside the... Does the robot have a name? I don't even know if the robot has a name. Anyway, he gets up inside the robot, and he manages to... melt some of the controls or the gun or something like that. And then he separates, he kind of goes back to the same time point where he was freezing them. And then he grabs Aquaman and John Jones, and he has this de-evolutionizer ray that he's going to use on them. Now, I kind of liked, I liked what John Jones did here. This was pretty elaborate, and I have to comment on this before I continue with the storyline. He takes silica or sand, and he like heats it up until it turns to glass, and then he coats it with nickel or silver, or I forget which one it was, and he makes a mirror out of it. So when he points the de-evolutionizer ray at him, John Jones disappears, but he thinks that he's defeated him. He's like, oh, well, that was pretty easy. And then Aquaman, I'm not 100% sure where he went during this, but he went and got a gigantic squid and then used that to kind of like ink up the front of the robot to kind of jack him up a little bit. The storyline was a little bit not very fluid for me. Like I said, I mean, he's going after John Jones, and then all of a sudden, he does that, and then the squids and he, or sorry, octopi, and then they start climbing on the robot, and he's overtaken by that. But I thought it was pretty elaborate that John Jones decided to create glass and then a mirror. I think it would have been faster to just go and find like a store or something.
Yeah.
And like steal it. Or you know, something like that. But instead he's like, I'm gonna take this sand and then I'm gonna spin it really fast and then I'm gonna heat it up and then I'm gonna cover it with silver. Wow. So anyway. So he uses the mirror to reflect the evolutionizer ray, and it turns the gun into its basic form, which is carbon. So, yeah, that was pretty interesting. And then Wonder Woman and Green Lantern fight him, and Wonder Woman is in her invisible jet. And again, I'm not 100% sure why she needed a jet, considering she could fly.
Actually, at that point, she couldn't.
Wasn't she flying in the Starro one?
No, she was on the plane.
Oh, okay.
She Wonder Woman did not gain the ability to fly until she was rebooted in 1986 or 87. Okay. After the crisis on Infinite Earth. So that's why she had the plane.
So anyway, Zotar protects himself in these magnetic bubbles. And of course they're yellow and Green Lantern can't do anything about it. He makes a comment about it. But there happens to be an asteroid, and what they call it, a bolide in the comic book, and they actually even put what the definition of a bolide is: a bright meteor which explodes in the course of its flight through the atmosphere. He's like, well, I can't do anything to the bubble directly, so I'm just going to throw this rock at him, which is what he does, which you know knocks him out of the sky. I'm sorry if my descriptions are a bit more crude, but I don't. But,
no problem.
So then he's sort of like fighting all of them at once using some sort of radiation. They kind of depict it as like sound waves almost. It was kind of interesting. But they eventually defeat him and then they send him back to the point in time. Oh yeah, sorry. Superman comes in at the end. He hasn't been there like the entire time, and then all of a sudden Superman shows up and he sort of saves the day and just takes out the robot and then he smashes the controls. I thought that kind of cheapened what they had been doing. Mm-hmm. it was like where they're all working hard and it's like, what are you guys doing, you know, get out of the way, you know. It was like the annoyed dad coming in. I mean, he didn't say anything like that, but it was just kind of funny that they'd been fighting this whole time and then Superman comes in and just takes him out in a couple of punches. So they take him back to the time that he was originally from, and he can't understand because the note that he originally saw said that all he could read was one of the four weapons used by Zotar to defeat the Justice League of America. But there were parts that were scribbled out, and you see the original journal entry from Wonder Woman, which says, "The Illusion Maker was one of the four weapons used by Zotar in his unsuccessful attempt to defeat the Justice League of America." You know, okay. I bet that kind of had kids hanging back in the day. They're like, oh, man, I wonder what that actually said. Uh-huh. So, you know, they defeat him. You know, I think that overall, I didn't really care for this one as much as Starro because they're all fighting him and then Superman just kind of comes along. At least in the first one, it was like, well, where's Superman? Oh, well, he's busy mm-hmm. or something. And this, he just kind of comes along and covers for everyone. So I think it kind of cheapened what they were all trying to do. I think that they made their efforts, I think, in the Starro issue, they made more sense with what they were doing to try to stop Starro, but in this one it didn't make a whole lot of sense. It seemed like a lot of the things that they were doing were way too elaborate, you know. John Jones heats up the sand. You know, Green Lantern gets a hold of a meteor to crash into the yellow bubbles that are protecting him. It seemed a bit more elaborate than what it needed to be. I mean, it's not that they're not smart. They are, but, you know, it just kind of felt like this issue was sort of going through the motions, and the character was, I think, somewhat forgettable. You know, I mean, Starro, I don't know why, but because Starro was a gigantic starfish, it just stands out more in my mind. Like, I think looking back on it, you know, I'm not going to remember this character very well. But Starro, because it's a gigantic starfish, I'm going to remember it. Plus, you know, I mean, it was controlling people with its mind or whatever. Mm-hmm. But this guy's just like, oh, well, I stole a bunch of high-tech stuff, and I'm going to take you out now. And one by one. And there really was no challenge in there. I mean, at least when the Starro issue, you know, they were like, crap, I mean, nothing we're doing is working. You know, whereas in this, like, each one of them knocks out each one of the things that he's stolen one by one until the end. Mm-hmm. So it didn't feel like it was much of a challenge. But, I mean, it was still fun. It was nice seeing them work together and stuff like that. But I felt that this was a sort of a throwaway issue.
Okay. Well, I was kind of disappointed about this too, but one of the things that really made me like this issue is that this is actually one of the stories that survive past the crisis, because of course the slight difference was that Superman wasn't in the story because he wasn't a member of the Justice League, and he found out and just happened upon the situation while the Justice League members were fighting each other, and then comes in and saves the day. And then the story goes that because of this, then they take him back to their headquarters and show him all the stuff, and they ask him to be a member, and he declines, saying that he, you know, his time is not his own or whatever. But so I thought it was kind of cool to actually see. I didn't realize the story was this old. I thought it was something created, you know, post-crisis. So I thought that was cool to see it back in this day, basically telling the similar story, although Superman was already a member of the JLA and was in, you know, time traveling or whatever. I do like how they have the booklet, or the book that Zotar finds ends up being their... Although it says it at the beginning, doesn't it? It's revealed in this ancient book written by Wonder Woman herself, which records the exploits of those ancient heroes. So, darn it. Never mind.
But it was still kind of cool, because, I mean, when I was reading it, I thought, I wonder what it said. I wonder what it mm-hmm. said. You know?
Yeah, that was cool. I like, though, once they all meet up, that one of the pages, what page is it? They're not numbered very well. Page 17. When Batman and Green Lantern and Wonder Woman are finally able to leave and go after Zotar, Batman says, "Zotar is the most dangerous enemy the JLA has ever faced." Which is pretty cool, considering this is the second appearance of the Justice League. It's one thing to say it, you know, once you're at issue 122, but when you're in only your second appearance, that's not really a line you can use too well. It's like, well, this guy's more dangerous than the starfish. Yeah. On the robot, though, I thought it was the weapon, his blaster weapon thing, the gun, is very inappropriately placed, especially if you look at it on the cover.
Very good point.
and when Superman shows up, they change the angle so you don't actually notice it, but he uses both hands to smush it, which made me hurt a little. But it's just pretty inappropriately placed. So I that was the first thing that, as soon as I saw this cover, I was like, wow, that I can't believe the comics could approve that. But I don't know where else you would have put it. Well, I guess above the window would have been a good idea.
They just weren't as salaciously minded as we are now.
Yeah. Well, I guess they're saying it's like a belly button laser instead of
it is, you know, you
what
could
I
argue
mean.
that. I mean, it is more of a belly button laser than
Yeah,
a crotch laser.
it still looks like a crotch laser to me, but that's just me. I do like though that they bring Batman in to actually play a role through the whole story this time, even though he doesn't actually do a whole lot. He is in here, so instead of being like busy taking care of crime in Gotham, so that was cool. But unfortunately, he doesn't really get to do much. In fact, what does he do? 'Cause
Nothing.
oh, okay. I have an idea where he may be and why he hasn't answered Snap. So he goes and checks on his theory. So, okay, he's there, but he's not there. But he's more there than he was last issue. So,
Are we talking about Batman or Gandalf?
yeah. Yeah.
All right, Bilbo, go and get the thing from Smaug. I'll be back in a few weeks.
I just gotta do this real quick.
Ha
I'm gonna do something altogether different, but other than that, I didn't think it was too bad of a story. I do think that I could see why Starro was used as the first villain. I think I think the third story, the next issue, is better than this one by quite a bit. But I don't know, it's not terrible. But like you said, I think the only reason why I think this guy still has a name is just because he's literally known as the second person they ever fought, and because this story is used is actually retold like three or four times post-crisis when they keep reiterating the first time Superman met the League. So
Well, and it was also used in a sort of a different way in I don't remember the title of the Young Justice episode, but they all team up and fight this gigantic robot that's being manned by a person. You know,
okay.
I don't know if it's the same guy or not. But it's the same exact thing.
Okay.
They're all trying to find different ways to kill him. He's like a bad version of Red Tornado, I guess.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
So, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of it's yeah. I think it was supposed to have something to do kind of a combination of this and the first Teen Titans adventure, because they went against the tornado guys. I don't know. But on the other hand, they do have some interesting ads in this book.
Yeah, I think the very first page. You have a car you can build, and like, what is it? A real mobile tank. Over 6 feet
Yes.
long, only $4.98. Man, if I could buy my own personal tank for $5, that would be awesome.
And even 1960, I mean, $5 wasn't, I mean, it's not like it was $5 equals $100.
And of course, the
So,
tank looks, you know, similar in appearance to the World War II and on
yeah,
Sherman tanks.
yeah, I don't know how they did this. It got an intercom system, revolving turret, elevating 75 millimeter cannon.
You know, nowadays you get sued for this kind of advertisement,
Oh, yeah.
but back in the day, an intercom system was like a hole in the side that, you know, went to something else, and the revolving turret was just you turning the turret. The
Oh, that's probably
elevates.
what it is.
I bet you it was just this gigantic piece of cardboard, guaranteed.
The
So,
intercom system was two cans with a string.
exactly.
Two-way radio controls was the two cans. The whip antenna and flag would be a piece of string. The real periscope permits you to see the enemy without exposing yourself. Probably didn't work. Probably a bent, like, toilet paper roll.
And I don't know what this kid has, this weird looking, it almost looks like a speed racer helmet or something.
Yeah, it's not listed. I'm betting that's just something you have to provide. It's probably helmet sold separately.
What's funny is that if you look at the money back guarantee, the little cutout you're supposed to send in, says rush my General Patton tank at once.
If not, if I'm not 100% delighted,
100% delighted, I may return after 10-day free trial for prompt refund of full purchase price. Now, how many kids like?
It probably didn't even get
sending this back.
Wow. Well, and it was $4.98 plus 63¢ shipping and handling.
And here's a term you don't see very often: send COD. I will pay postman on delivery.
Oh wow! Yeah, usually
I haven't seen COD for a long time.
And even when I did, it was sorry, no CODs. actually, I want to.
The first, if you look at the very first panel, like the not after that ad, it's funny because like he has frozen them, but if you look at them, they all look like they're taking really uncomfortable poos. Like every single one of them, like Wonder Woman is just kind of squirming, like, oh,
yeah,
this is a big one, you know? Sean Jones, like his head is like vibrating, like he's really bearing down on that puppy. It's like, I gotta get. He's like, I knew I should have taken more Mucilix this morning.
Look at Aquaman, though. He looks like he's actually off his seat pushing.
I know, his head is tilted.
And it's Green like, Lantern's contorting himself. It's like, we're the JLA. We've got to stop the weapons.
Let's power this through.
Master. Wow. But first, we have to flush. Oh, man.
Sorry, there's the artists just aren't thinking of these things when they're drawing this stuff. and also, what's his name? Snapper. He wasn't really in this a whole lot.
No, I don't mind that too much.
Which I don't mind that either, because he's like a hipster Jimmy Olsen.
Dick, that crazy claw. I like that. let's see. And of course, I like how, and of course, they do make sure to, you know, recount his origin in that one panel when the Justice League made me an honorary member of the, after I helped them against Starro, they gave me an alarm belt, with which I could send out an emergency call. I don't want to do the panic button bit, but if this isn't a real cool emergency, then I've got holes in my head. That's the kind of jive talk that the kids back then spoke of. Okay, here we go. I found a calculator. So $4.98 in 60 in 2011 is the same as $37.98. So today it would be a $40 tank.
Still pretty good.
It could be like a Power Wheels.
It could be. I think it's cardboard.
Me too. I wonder what 63¢ the shipping is. It's the same as $4.80 for shipping. Wow. And now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Well, do you have anything else you wanted to say on the second appearance of the Justice League?
Yeah, I like the pages on showing the difference between the timber wolf and the prairie wolf, and then showing like a brief history of Hawaii. I wish they would do like that kind of stuff in comics nowadays. With the target audience, it wouldn't be very appealing. So,
no. Well, I think
for what the audience was back then, I think it was good.
I wonder if they did it for all the states, but I know 1960 was the year that Hawaii became a U.S. state.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that... That's some pretty detailed art on it, too.
Yeah, it's not bad.
You look at that third panel. It's a small panel, but that's like George Perez detail in there. If you look at that. Wow. That's not some bad art. And the kids surfing and stuff. Aloha, Hawaii. There's a cool text piece about the wonders of time. Well, that was it. You can get some British Empire stamps if you act now. Um, You just need to enclose 10 cents for postage. And then if you want spending money, sell these popular patriotic and religious mottos. Because if you sell 25, you keep $2.50. If you sell 30, you keep $3. And if you sell all 40 of these things, you keep $4, which, as we've just learned, is going to be more than $30. And you only have to sell them at like 35 cents each. So that's not too bad, if you ask me. That's pretty good spending money. And then, like we liked last issue, there's a big how to gain up to 50 pounds of mighty muscles, or how to change fat into muscles fast.
Visit your local body shop.
Exactly. And then the back cover, of course, has your sell seeds and you win prizes. And these ads stay around for a while because I know that I've seen several that involve like having a Nintendo and a calculator wristwatch. But of course, this is 1960, so you get an 8-volume encyclopedia and 4 Daisy air rifles, a girl's travel case, a pup tent, a sleeping bag with a cover for when it rains.
You had me at BB gun.
Oh, I know. They have an Elvis Presley guitar too. I thought it was cool that they had pocket radios. I don't know why that surprises me, but they had a pocket radio back then too. Nice, must be a transistor thing. Mm-hmm. A 3-speed bike looks like it has a basket on it. A Chemcraft lab archery set, complete fishing outfit. A movie projector, even a hot rod racer, which probably is made by the same people that make that glorious tank. But if you get the grand prize, you could get an RCA portable television, a Polaroid Land camera, a GE hi-fi record player, that's right kids, stereo, or $100 in cash. And you know it's $100 because it's a bag that has 100 and the dollar symbol written on it.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
So the other issues that came out this month. We have Superman number 136. Featuring the man who married Lois Lane. Apparently Lois is going to go into the 23rd century with this alien-looking dude. Future history says that I will marry you and that we will be very happy. And Superman says, even I can't change destiny, Lois.
He's not putting up much of a fight. She's like obviously turning to him for comfort, and he's like, sorry, he said that we're supposed to be together. There's nothing
he's from the future. It says it in his book or whatever, and it's not the Justice League memoirs, so I don't know what it is.
Way to bend over and take it up the butt, Superman.
Yeah, way to go. Lois Lane, number 16, the Kryptonite girl, and somehow Lois has acquired Kryptonite vision, but it was by accident.
And this sounds more like a storyline to a Smallville episode.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. I like how she feels she has to tell him, you must believe me, Superman. I acquired Kryptonite vision by accident. I meant you no harm. So he's like, Lois, take your eyes off me. Go far away. You've become a menace to my life. But technically, really, I guess Superman could go away too, but whatever. Wonder Woman is attacked by the Sphinx in Wonder Woman 113.
Invasion of the Sphinx creatures.
Bum, bum, bum.
That's original.
You know, and see, these days she would just stand there and deflect the blast from her with her bracelets, but
this
way she can run. Well, she's got the ballet slippers, so why not? Flash 112 looks to be the introduction of the Elongated Man.
Yeah.
Back in the days when he actually wore a mask. This is his first appearance, and he has a secret origin revealed. So yay, plus Kid Flash has another whirlwind adventure. Superboy, number 80, in which Superboy meets Supergirl in a miscolored costume, because everyone knows that the old school Supergirl had blue skirt. Jimmy Olsen, number 44, where Jimmy turns into the Wolfman of Metropolis. Batman number 131, which appears to be a future one of those. Batman didn't do imaginary stories. They did these stories where Alfred would actually sit down and write stories of some possible future thing. And this appears to be the story of, apparently, Batman has married Batwoman, and they're watching on a monitor as Dick Grayson and Bruce and, let's see, I think her name's Kathy Kane. So Bruce and Kathy's son go out as the new Batman and Robin. And, of course, Dick is Batman, and their son, who they don't name on the cover, is Robin and is a redhead. And to indicate and to remind everyone that these are not the original Caped Crusaders, while they have the exact same costumes, they do have a big Roman numeral 2 plastered across their chest as well, so that you don't, you know, you don't want to be confused. And I think it's interesting that they specifically say that Batman and Batwoman have retired, but they're sitting in the living room in full costume. Detective Comics numbers 278. Batman and Robin fighting the man who became giant.
Yay.
And it's also got a Martian Manhunter story in the background. Apparently he gets defeated, judging by the title, The Defeat of John Jones. And Girls' Romances, number 68. And I feel sorry for the girls stuck out in the rain.
Yeah, I don't... That's just...
Apparently she's a kid, but she's not yet a woman.
Girls,
she's not a girl.
Girls' Romances.
Yeah, see? Action Comics, number 263, with Superman on the World of Bizarros, which is pretty cool.
Us find the defendant Superman guilty. Us order court to change you into a Bizarro like us. There is no escape. I'm doomed to spend the rest of my life on this mad world. Again, Superman, way to give up.
Yay. I'm guessing, even though the handcuffs are colored white, I'm guessing the green glow indicates kryptonite. I don't know. But technically, if the Bizarros found him guilty, doesn't that mean he's innocent?
I don't know.
Although, I guess that's a modern thing. I think back then they just talked like kids, like babies. Us find him. I like the clock. The numbers are all jacked up on that thing.
Oh, yeah. They're all out of order and stuff.
Yeah. And the jury is made up of, one, two, three, four, five Bizarro Supermans and three Bizarro Loises. So, and these are the days before Bizarro's Superman, or Bizarro, the S shield on Bizarro's chest switched around to the, you know, B backwards and stuff. Then we've got Adventure Comics number 271, which is pretty famous for being the story where we first learned how Superboy met Lex Luthor, and they were actually friends. And Luthor was working on figured out a way to save Superboy from kryptonite poisoning and make him immune to it, but then they had the terrible accident that most people focus in on the fact that it took out Lex Luthor's hair, but the main point is that he actually it's a scientific breakthrough, and Superboy has ruined it. So that's part of the reason. It's not just the loss of hair, although 1960 hair was a big deal for people. Then there's Star Spangled War Stories number 90, and if you've ever wanted to see a giant tank fighting a giant dinosaur, this is the issue for you. You probably wouldn't be able to afford it now, but yeah. And then finally, for that month, was Strange Adventures number 115. And apparently, they have giant tigers. And that's kind of scary, actually. And they're on the loose, because the spaceship is dropping them off on flat platforms. So, that's that for that month. And so we're going to play a quick promo. We're going to talk about Brave and the Bold number 30 and talk about the next month worth of comics, and then we'll be done. So stick, I don't know, stay tuned. Yeah, stick around. We'll be right back.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman Podcast,
Superman Forever Radio,
The Superman Vidcast,
The World's Best Podcast,
and
Radio KAL from SupermanHomepage.com,
as well as the audio dramas Superman, Last Son of Krypton, and Supergirl, Last Daughter of Krypton, from Pendant Audio Production. Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
Jeffrey Taylor, Michael Bailey,
J. David Weider,
Cayman Stoll,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V.
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
This is the voice of the randomizer. Do you hear me, Earthman? You gave me your numbers and forced me to pick one. For that, you must face the consequences. Each week, I will make you review a random comic book. Do you hear me, Earthman? A random comic book.
Yes, each week on the 20-minute long box, I submit myself to the powers of randomness and review a title from my collection, completely at random and all within 20 minutes. It's the Super Compressed podcast for the decompressed, written-for-trade age. Join me, Steve Lacey, each week at 20minuteslongbox.libsyn.com or find me on iTunes.
So, Brave and the Bold number 30, with a cover date of June-July 1960, was released on April 28th, 1960, with a interesting-looking cover by Mike
Sikowski.
Thank you. And Murphy Anderson, featuring the Justice League, all in these, looks like, glass tubes, and it looks like their powers are being taken from them and put into a synthetic being known as Amazo, who on the cover looks to be completely bald.
And he's got a nice, pretty little swimming cap with a widow's peak.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, he totally is bald on the cover. And the shirt
he's
that doesn't...
And he's wearing pants that look like some of those alternative peppermint sticks that you can buy at Christmas.
Yes, the lemon and lime variety or something. I always thought it was interesting, this costume, though, because it's like he's got a shirt that doesn't go quite enough all the way up, but he does have matching armbands, so that's cool.
Clearly the guy that designed him, which was a guy, was not really fashion inclined.
Yeah.
He's like, well, I don't care, just get this on.
Just get it on there, and we'll just figure out the colors later.
Okay.
Yeah. The title of this story is The Case of the Stolen Superpowers. It was written by Gardner Fox, penciled by Mike Sikowski.
Yeah.
Yeah. Inked by Bernard Sachs, and edited by Julie Schwartz. And I do want to point out, because I forgot to mention it, and neither one of us mentioned it, both of the stories covered in this episode were reprinted in Justice League of America 68, which is one of those 80-page giants that came out in November-December 1966. Justice League of America Archives Volume 1, which is a hardcover that came out in 1992. And Showcase Presents Justice League of America Volume 1 trade paperback from 2006. The Justice League roll call for this issue is Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Superman, Green Lantern, Flash, Batman, and the Martian Manhunter. So, at high noon, we see the Flash running across Central City to stop Mirror Master from destroying the Central City Bank. Deducing that the Mirror Master is on the roof of the nearby building, Flash uses his speed to try to run up the side of the building, but partway up, he suddenly loses his powers. However, before he can crash to the ground, his powers return in time for him to use his arms to whip up a cushion of air so he can land safely. And he then runs back up the building and quickly takes care of Mirror Master, proving that he can do that without taking up an entire issue of Flash Comics. Later, over a stretch of mountains, Green Lantern spots a bridge that has been washed out, and the Cannonball Express, which is a train, is heading for it, for where it used to be, actually. So Green Lantern uses his ring to create a set of tracks for the train, but suddenly his ring just cuts out on him, sending both the hero and the train plummeting. Fortunately, his ring reactivates in time for him to save himself and the train. Not far away, Wonder Woman is trying to save a runaway missile with her lasso when her strength suddenly leaves her and she loses the grip of her lasso. That makes no sense. Let me try that again. Not far away, Wonder Woman is trying to save a runaway missile with her lasso when her strength suddenly leaves her and she loses her grip on her lasso. That's better. But it is only temporary. And soon her strength returns and she has time to guide her plane back to grab the lasso again and fling the missile out to sea. Speaking of the oceans, which I didn't because it's actually the sea. Speaking of the sea, Aquaman spots a sinking ship at 40 fathoms below with a diver trapped under a fallen mast. Realizing he would not be able to save the diver in time, Aquaman summons a couple of whales to lift the ship to the surface. But, like the others, he temporarily loses his powers before the ship reaches the surface and the whales start to swim away. Also like the others, his powers return and he summons the whales back to finish the job they started. Elsewhere, John Jones, is using his Martian super breath to clear away dense fog for an ambulance when suddenly his powers fade. And he's just going... Fortunately, they return just as quickly and he's able to complete his task. The next day, Barry Allen sees a report about a strange case that he believes requires the attention of the Justice League. Once the entire team gets together, Flash explains that a private aquarium in France, a criminal used a green beam to cut a hole in the wall to enter, and then lifted a 400-pound tank containing a European catfish. And, oh, let me point this out. A criminal used a green beam to cut a hole in the wall to enter, which Green Lantern says sounds like his power. Because, you know, in case we can't put this together. Then the criminal lifted a 400-pound tank containing a European catfish, which Martian Manhunter says must have been his Martian super strength, because it couldn't have been Superman's, and ran off with it at super speed, which the Flash says sounds like me, after summoning fish to be used as stepping stones. And Aquaman says, that's mine. So a second robbery involved the criminal standing on the wing of a plane, like Wonder Woman, and using a golden lasso to snatch a mesh cage carrying a cicada. Flash believes these crimes coincide with the heroes losing their powers, and Snapper realizes that the catfish and the cicada are the oldest members of their respective species, which causes Flash to make the obvious leap in logic that someone is using them to find the secret of immortality. Compiling a list of the oldest members of the animal kingdom, the team splits up. Wonder Woman heads to Peru to protect the oldest man on Earth, but he refuses her protection because he has his spirit dolls. Suddenly, they hear a crack of thunder, and the villain runs up at super speed to grab the old man. Wonder Woman attempts to snare him in her lasso, but a mysterious voice tells him to use John Jones's super breath to literally blow Wonder Woman away. Since he's using Martian Manhunter's power, he is suddenly weakened when Jose comes up with a spirit doll and a torch. But before Wonder Woman can capture the villain, Jose, thinking it's the doll that's weakening him, the villain, extinguishes the flame. The villain is then able to switch to Green Lantern's power, using his power ring to create two powerful hands to grab both Jose and Wonder Woman and fly off with them. Speaking of Green Lantern, he and Wonder Woman make their way to the Galapagos Islands to protect the world's oldest tortoise, which I spelled tortoise because I can't spell. GL covers the entire island in a dome to keep the supervillain out. When he arrives, the villain uses several powers to try and gain entry through the bubble, but fails each time. He then dives underwater, where there is apparently six tenths of an ounce of gold to every six. He then dives underwater, where there is 0.6 of an ounce of gold to every 5 billion cubic feet of seawater. So he uses the Flash's super speed to collect the gold and soon is able to coat his body, allowing him to enter the dome. And you were talking about going a little crazy and going a little overboard trying to come up with this stuff. There was sand, too, and it's yellow.
Of course. You know, really, but it's like, where do you draw the line? Like, is it just... Like,
no.
What is yellow? I mean, I don't... I really want to know who came up with that idea, and I want to go back in time and punch him in the face and be like, please, please don't do this, because we're just going to have these awful characters being created like Parallax, and we're going to create this horrible continuity where Hal Jordan destroys everyone, but Parallax is going to be the one possessing him. Please, you know, to kill him. I don't know. Just depends.
I have an old Superman comic, but the color has yellow on it, so that means that no matter what Green Lantern does, he can never hurt the comic. It's so awesome.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Makes me happy.
Right.
Where was I? Oh, so once inside the dome, GL uses his ring to create a storm to wash off the gold, while Aquaman hides the tortoise in an underwater cave. Meanwhile, GL tries blasting the villain, but the villain keeps using Flash's speed to dodge the blasts. Then uses super breath to blow the yellow sand at GL. See, there's the sand. At Green Lantern, neutralizes the ring and causing him to pass out. After using his Green Lantern power to encase the hero in an energy rocket and sent him to Professor Ivo, his creator.
That's a cool name, by the way.
Yes.
I like that name.
Professor Ivo. He then uses his Martian vision to spot Aquaman and the tortoise in the cave. Now, Aquaman attempts to stop him by creating a whirlpool, which is actually kind of cool because I didn't realize Aquaman could do that. So I was pretty impressed. But, and this is probably the craziest thing I've ever seen. The villain uses Green Lantern's power to create a fishing rod and actually fishes both our hero and the turtle, or the tortoise, out of the water before sending them to Ivo in rockets as well. So much for Aquaman. At a Midwestern zoo that's not named, but has got to be in the Midwest because that's where the Flash is from, Flash and Martian Manhunter plan to protect the oldest living bird. But the villain surprises them by burrowing underground and using super strength and flight to fly off with the aviary that the bird is in. So Martian Manhunter uses his super breath to stop him by literally blowing on the building, and the villain is kind of in a stalemate because apparently his flying power equals that of the blowing power of Martian Manhunter. So the villain decides to drop the building, which causes Martian Manhunter to dive after the building, giving our villain enough time to snare him with Wonder Woman's lasso, swing him around a few times until the hero loses consciousness, and then use his ring to rocket the Martian away. Meanwhile, the Flash uses his super speed to create an updraft that allows him to lower the building slowly to the ground, just in time for the villain to envelop both the Flash and the building in an energy bubble and fly off with them. So Flash races around inside, plucks some of the feathers from several of the different yellow birds, grabs the oldest one, and escapes by flying through the bubble and out over the Atlantic. Because that would work. He catches just enough wind to land on a nearby boat. Unfortunately, he's landed on Professor Ivo's floating laboratory, and he's just too tired to prevent a glass tube from covering him while the professor takes the bird. As the tube fills up with a gas to knock out our hero, Ivo introduces our supervillain to be the android he calls Amazo, while Amazo reveals that the wind that carried the Flash to the boat was actually the robot's Martian super breath. Soon, inside our ship, inside the ship, we find our heroes trapped inside golden cylinders. They're not really gold. Inside cylinders. And are kept help... I don't know why I wrote gold. They are kept helpless by a greenish-yellow chlorine gas inside. So Ivo then has Amazo lay down on a table as he activates his machine to permanently transfer the powers of the JLA, or at least those that are there, to the android, because they already have them, and now he's going to give them to him again. During the transfer, Ivo reveals via thought bubble that he performed a chemical analysis on all the old people that are old creatures that they brought to find out what allows certain animals to live so long. Let me try that again. I should probably read these before I start. During the transfer, Ivo reveals via thought bubble that he performed a chemical analysis to find out what allows certain animals to live so long and created an elixir. Downing the whole bottle, he believes that he's had enough to keep him alive for another 500 years. At this point, the power transfer is complete. So Ivo released the heroes and has Amazo charge his ring using a power battery that the robot somehow stole between panels, even though we didn't see that happen, and Green Lantern keeps the battery invisible to prevent things like that from actually happening. Amazo then uses his ring to will the JLA members to forget that they were JLA members and to erase all knowledge of Ivo and Amazo from their minds, leaving our helpless heroes, and instead of, taking them or dropping them off the side of the boat or something, the two villains just go into another room on the boat to plan their world conquest. Inside, they soon find themselves witnessing a green glow that starts to enter the room. The green glow soon reveals itself to be Green Lantern, who quickly bathes both of the villains in green energy. Amazo attempts to ensnare him with his lasso, but the android can't control it. He soon learns that the powers of super breath and super speed are also not working. Green Lantern then uses his ring to will both of the villains to just stay put, which works even though one of them's a robot. And then he heads back out to his friends. He then bathes the heroes in the same green energy, restoring both their memories and powers. When asked how he wasn't affected, JL explains that when Ivo raised the tubes, he quickly inhaled as much of the chlorine gas as he could. Remember how I said it was a greenish-yellow chlorine gas? Well, when Amazo willed the heroes to forget, Green Lantern was slowly exhaling the gas, which basically had the gas all around his face and neutralized the power of the ring so it wouldn't affect him or something to that effect.
Right.
After recharging his ring, he went after Ivo and Amazo and used his ring to absorb all the android's stolen powers. Days later, we see that the JLA, including honorary member Snapper Carr, are in attendance at Ivo's trial, as Ivo was sentenced to, ironically, 500 years in prison. While he'll actually have to carry that out since he drank the elixir. We also learned that the inert body of Amazo is now in a trophy case in the JLA trophy room. Meanwhile, Batman is still apparently in Africa guarding the world's oldest elephant, while Superman is still guarding the world's oldest whale in one of the oceans. The end. Now, we don't actually see Batman and Superman at the end still guarding them, but they went off to do that, and we never saw them again in the story. So, I'm just assuming that's what's happening. I should explain that. Okay, now, I had a few problems with this one, even though I like the story, and it's a fun little story. And I pointed out a couple things. What was funny, first of all, is that if you look at the story at the end, Green Lantern tells everyone how he, avoided forgetting and everything. And part of the flashback involves the end of his oath. And when we cut to the present, Green Lantern's finishing the oath. So apparently, if I'm reading this correctly, it looks like Green Lantern was actually like, and then I went to my Green Lantern, and I actually said, in darkest day, or in brightest day, and blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evils might beware my power, Green Lantern's light. And then I went after and took care of the bad guys. And it just seemed kind of funny that he actually had to recite his own oath to them, even though they probably would have witnessed him doing that at the first place. Like I said, Superman and Batman are not seen again after the team initially splits up, meaning that it appears that no one has told them that they can stop their patrols of these old creatures. Amazo shouldn't have been able to recharge his ring on Green Lantern's power battery, because that only works with a Green Lantern ring, and Amazo wouldn't have an official, actual Green Lantern ring. So,
excellent.
But then, I've never really understood how he's got a Green Lantern ring, because he always has that. And I've never understood how that works, and no one really explains it, so I guess it's just one of those, we're supposed to just let it go, like the glass is working on, to fool everybody for Superman. So, on the other hand, though, the good points. I thought this was a fun story. When we see the trophy room at the end, we actually do see a starfish in the trophy room, which was kind of cool. And again, we get something about the secrets of long life, which makes sense because of the whole, immortality thing that Professor Ivo was trying to do. Apparently, these sound more like tall tales, but apparently, if the date of one's birth is divisible by 7, he will be lucky enough to live a ripe old age. And I decided to sit down and check it out, and it turns out I will live to be a ripe old age because it's all divisible by 7. I was pretty happy. My wife's going to die really soon, apparently, because hers isn't. But I'm going to live really old. And apparently, if you cut your hair and then burn it by throwing it into a fire, if you get a bright flame, you're going to have a long life. And the brighter the flame, the longer the life. So next time you get your hair cut, ask your barber, your hairstylist, if you can keep some of the hair. Go home, set something on fire, throw your hair in it, ignore the stench, and then see how the whole thing goes. I didn't try that one.
I guess using a lighter and off when I was a kid kind of counts.
Yeah, there you go. I burned my hair once on trying to ignite a grill, and my eyelashes on one eye still haven't come completely back yet. But anyway, it was once fancied that whoever found an acorn and always carried it in a pocket would lead a long life. So if you don't live in an area where there's acorns, you're just out of luck. And apparently a way to ensure long life for a newborn. And Isaac, you've got kids. I wonder if you did this. Superstition decrees that it be carried out that the child, as soon as or shortly after birth, while it's newborn, be carried upstairs to the top room of the house, and as the carrier stands on a chair, the baby must be held as near to the skylight as possible. Did you do that?
No.
How many kids do you have?
4. I don't think I've ever done that.
Well, they're gonna die young, man.
Apparently.
Sorry to say it. it's just inevitable, apparently. That didn't happen to me, but I've got the whole 7 divisible by 7 thing, so I'm good to go. Now, also, there was a cool ad for the Palisades Amusement Park in New Jersey. And so you could be Superman's guest at the 5-ring Hunt Bros Royal International Circus. And if you brought DC comic at the time had a coupon worth $1, so you could get a $1 general admission, which is pretty cool. It's good for all weekday afternoon and evening performances, and on Saturday and Sunday it's only good for the evening performances. But they have free parking, acts, and dancing. So, if you really wanted to go, it's a little late now. We have the Justice League mail room. So for the first time, there's actually Justice League mail. Apparently, because of the fact that it took a couple months in between issues, they actually had enough lead time that by the time they got to this issue, we actually got to see mail. And the Justice League mailroom image is pretty interesting because they have their Justice League meeting table covered in mail. They have 7 chairs, but you can only see 5 of them because 2 of them are facing completely away from us. We're led to believe those must be the Batman and Superman chairs because you can't see who's in them. But poor Martian Manhunter is almost completely engulfed by one of those chairs, so you really don't see him too much. So basically you're just seeing Aquaman, Flash, Green Lantern, and Wonder Woman. So that's kind of sad. And it's really backwards because it's really interesting that the letters are written with an italic slant and then the responses from the editor are written in normal type, and traditionally it's been the other way around, so that's cool. So that's what passes for the text piece this time. We have another Science Says You're Wrong, and then of course we have the same Do You Want to spending Money to Sell These Popular Patriotic and Religious Mottos, which now that I think about it is pretty much bringing religion and politics into these kids' lives, which are two things you're not supposed to talk about. There's a cool kind of a PSA about being your own boss.
With this guy that looks like a really young Vulcan that's in a bad mood or something. He's got this cut, and his eyebrows in the next to the last panel look very Vulcan and Spock-like.
Yes, and his hair is all kinds of screwy.
So apparently Spock is a lot older than what we thought he was, because he grew up in the 50s.
Yeah, he was just a little kid, and he liked to make planes and stuff. And then you could win a beautiful signet ring engraved with your own initial. That's right. I could have gotten one with a C. Isaac could have gotten one with an I. The letter, not the actual I. And you could, it's your own signet ring. For free!
Made of nickel silver, so it wasn't like plastic, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so it wasn't going to turn your finger green either, so that's pretty cool. And all you have to do is name the four famous U.S. presidents pictured. And I'm telling you right now, I can only name three of them. You got Abe Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, and George Washington. I don't know who that number two one is.
It's Grant.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. See, all you had to do is print your last name, which means you probably would have gotten an F, not an I.
I should have. I should send it in when like a return to sender. I'll be like, what the hell?
There is nothing on here that says that there is limited time. And that's all I've got. Did you have anything you wanted to add about this issue?
I really, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse with the ads. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some unique ones that come up in the future, but you know, I like the PSA stuff, the stuff about what time is and stuff like that. It's cool to have educational stuff like that in the comics.
Yeah, and that way you could use it as educational for the kids. They don't do that anymore because apparently adults read them, so they just have a lot of sex and raping and things. So that's pretty much it. Was there anything else you had on this one?
No, I mean, I really like this one because I like the character of Amazo. You know, I honestly think that it's been my favorite issue so far of the three we reviewed. So, yeah.
Cool.
It was really good. It was cool seeing them duplicate their powers and just beat the crap out of them.
And I forgot to mention, the very last panel, well, sort of, has a JLA special announcement. With this issue, we close the casebook of the Justice League of America. We'll be glad to reopen it and continue the adventures of the JLA in a magazine of its own, if enough of you readers request it. Please write and let us know. Which makes me believe, because of the way they worded it, that they probably already have planned to do a Justice League book. They just want to...
There was like
know,
two people that wrote in, and they're like, that's enough. Yeah.
That's enough. It doesn't matter. Now let me look and
no, it's
see
fair to say they already had it planned. They just wanted to make the people think that they had an impact on it and just toy with their lives.
Yeah, it's like backed by popular demand when people probably didn't demand it. I often wonder how often that they actually demand it when they say that, you know?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Real quick, this issue of Justice League, this issue of Brave and the Bold was on sale in April, so we're going to go over the books that came out in April, or at least just highlight some of the cool ones. There is Superboy number 81, which I think is cool because the costume is actually kind of, although it's missing the S, kind of makes me think of the new costume he's going to be wearing in the DC New. It's got the high collar.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And then, Jimmy Olsen 45 features Tom Baker, Power Lad. And for anyone that doesn't know, Tom Baker, was actually the name of one of the longest running and most beloved of the actors to play Doctor Who. So I thought that was funny.
Yeah, he's my second favorite.
So, yeah, see? Who's your favorite?
David Tennant.
Okay.
It was Tom Baker growing up, because that's what I, you know, that's how I was first introduced to Doctor Who, was when I was a kid. I used to watch it with my mom or dad, and, you know,
PBS
scarf, and I love that show, absolutely love it. But when they reinvented it, I really thought that David Tennant, you know, brought something special to it. And I mean, not that I dislike, you know, any of the rest of them, but David Tennant's my favorite.
Yeah, mine is David Tennant too, but mine's for a different reason. I'm kind of really new into the Doctor Who stuff. I think I saw about 10 minutes of a Tom Baker episode of Doctor Who when it was on PBS, and I was like, wow, this looks really cheap, and stopped watching it. And then I had been hearing a bunch of this Doctor Who stuff, so I wanted to check it out. And the first time I ever got to watch something Doctor Who was the BBC website was streaming stuff, and I think it was, I can't even think of what it's called. It was the Easter special right before he left. The one with... they go to that planet and they're in that big red bus, and they end up on another planet.
Yeah, the
yes.
desert.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The desert planet.
Yeah.
I can't think of that what that's called, but
it's like Planet of the Dead or something like that.
Yeah, it's either Planet of the Dead or Planet of the Undead. It can't be undead. But anyway, yeah, that was the first thing I ever saw. So in my mind, he's the first Doctor Who, so he's my Doctor Who. And then I also like
Christopher Eccleston.
Thank you. God bless you. And I've watched his whole series, because I have everything on DVD from Eccleston up to Matt Smith's first series. I have his whole first season series, whatever you want to call it. So I have all that. I haven't had a chance to watch it all yet, but David Tennant is just my favorite so far. But I've still got a long way to go to make a valid judgment on that.
Matt's really good too.
Yeah.
I love him too.
I think my favorite thing he did was just the part when he's just on his first episode, when he's talking to that big eyeball thing, and he's telling them all the stuff that's happened, and you see the eyeball flash through all the other doctors, and he just goes
incarnations of the doctor start
and he just walks up, busts through, and goes, "Hello, I'm the doctor." And it was just awesome. I was like jumping, and my wife was looking at me like I was weird, because I was on a laptop and I had headphones in, so she couldn't hear it. So it was like really crazy. But you know what? This isn't a Doctor Who podcast. This is a Justice League podcast. So we're not even talking about Justice League right now. We're just talking about other comics. But Flash number 113 is the first appearance of the Trickster, Jesse James. Who on the TV show in the 90s was played by Mark Hamill.
Oh.
Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that. And he also did the voice in the Justice League cartoons. He was in two episodes that he was in.
Yes. In addition, of course, everyone knows he was Joker.
Right.
But yes, he did voice Trickster on that one episode that dealt with that. And there's an ugly alien on World's Finest 110. This Mystery Space can't possibly be... No, it's not. Mystery from Space number 60 looks cool, just because it's Adam Strange versus Tentacles.
We tend to forget about that character. They don't highlight him a whole lot.
No, they don't. But you know what? He comes in... He teams up with the Justice League quite a few times.
Right.
So I'm trying to, you know, kind of point those out, but... He's one of my top characters that I don't know much about but want to. And then I try to read the stories and it's just like, eh.
Right.
It's a little tough, but and then there was one other thing. Oh, Action Comics number 265 came out this month. Featuring the day Supergirl revealed herself, which isn't good. This is before she revealed herself. So Supergirl's still a secret at this time. Oh, that's kind of cool. And this was an off month because a lot of the comics at this time were only coming out about 10 times a year instead of our usual 10 or 12. So this month did not have an issue of Superman.
That's
I know, it's kind of weird. In fact, I think that we're about to hit one of those weird skip month things between issues 1 and 2 of Justice League when we do that next episode.
Yeah.
But in any event, okay, so that's it. So that's it for this time. Thank you for joining us. And Isaac, would you like to say bye to anybody or give a shout out?
I love you, Mom.
There you go. We both love you, Isaac.
Going
Mom.
To Disneyland.
Yay! Make sure you email us at podcastofjustice.blogspot.com is the website, but the email address is, what was it, podcastofjustice@gmail.com, I think it is. If not, I'll fix this. Feel free to visit the site at podcastofjustice.blogspot.com, and thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.